Here's Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
We're continuing with discussion on the job picture here in the United States. Jeff Dowder is with us, and also as a result of that, who you are more inclined to vote for come November, whether it be President Bush or Senator John Kerry. Jeff Dowder, a gentleman from Temple City, California. You are, Jeff, and by the way, welcome to our program, and thank you for joining us in this roundtable discussion.
It's my pleasure.
You are going to vote for John Kerry, correct?
That is correct, yeah.
Why?
I'm voting for John Kerry because the job market right now in the United States is at an all-time low right now, and I know a lot of people that are out of work.
Are you currently out of work?
I am not currently out of work, no sir, but I had to obtain employment, and it's tough in any way that I could, and that's what led to what I had admitted in the press as a tragedy, but you the person who caused it's the same guy that caused 9/11, in my opinion. That's George Bush.
So. All right, Jeff, I want to bring the... and I understand what you're saying about the unemployment picture being caused by George Bush and this incident that you were involved in.
Well, I would...
I don't want you to tell me about it now, but it was having to do with something at your current place of employment?
Yes, sir.
All right, I want to bring the audience up to speed. You were working for a county park and recreation...
Yes, sir, I was working at Rivas Park. Public pool for a county park and rec. I was qualified certainly to a point, but...
All right, Jeff, on June 7th, just so I know what the story is, an 8-year-old boy by the name of Duron Mitchell drowned in the Rivas Park pool while you were working there as a lifeguard?
Yes, sir, that is correct, but to jump in, here's where we get to the part where President Bush and his policies have created a climate of fear among the job seekers, which caused me to panic. Because I didn't...
Well, look, the boy drowned partially as the result of you not knowing how to administer CPR. Isn't that correct?
Well, first of all, a lot of people put a lot of stock in CPR. There's no guarantee that because you administer CPR, a person's going to come back to life. I'm always amused by these people who think CPR will bring back a dead kid who's been at the bottom of a pool for 5 minutes. CPR is not guaranteed.
Yeah, but you don't know CPR, and you were working as a public lifeguard, and you got your job by lying on the application saying that you knew CPR.
That is correct, and that brings us to the crux of the problem, that George Bush and the George Bush administration job policies have not created new jobs. So that
Well, what's this got to do with lying about CPR?
Well, I had to lie to get the job so I could pay the rent, I could pay for food. I got state leaning on me for child support, which I owe back child support right now. Of $212,000, which I also told your producer, and I was desperate, and that's what George Bush has done. He has taken desperate people with his bogus war on terror, and he's put a lot of good people in a jam.
Okay, sir, you were the lifeguard on duty that day in June when that young man died, correct? But is that correct?
That is correct, but I want to go back to the day in question because... If you want to obsess on the Mitchell boy instead of the real issue, which is Bush Jr., okay, and the job creation policies, which caused me to be desperate for a job, and...
Well, I'm not obsessing, sir. I want to talk about an incident at your place of employment, a job you got because you lied on the application.
That is correct, yes, but let's go back to Dan's question. I had told them that CPR was not a panacea, okay? CPR is going to cure... CPR doesn't cure being dead. And I had told the lady there, who is a Mrs. Russell, who runs the Park and Rec Public Pool Department, I said, CPR doesn't cure being dead. And I said, it's not going to cure being dead. So I did tell them that I didn't know CPR.
I don't see that. If you told them...
Well, let me go on. I was told by two kids that a kid had slipped and fallen in the water, and that's not necessarily a sign that somebody's drowning. I have to make a... You understand that I have to make a snap judgment call. I have to make a snap judgment call and assume that he knows how to swim. So I made a snap judgment call. Otherwise, why is he in the pool? And I had told him that CPR wasn't a panacea, so I had to make a snap judgment call.
Well, the snap judgment call you made was that the kid must know how to swim, and so you went on talking to some young lady.
Well, they said I was talking to she was a young lady that was... I was talking to a young lady, and that is...
See, are you blaming the death of that boy in the Bush administration?
Absolutely.
Because of the fact that you were desperate, so desperate for a job, because of the bad job creation policies of George Bush, you lied on your application?
Absolutely, yes, sir. Absolutely. And I understand the tragedy involved in the death of the Mitchell boy, but I also understand the tragedy of, involved in my life where I've got the state of California right now who have had said that they're going to lien my, probably lien my property and probably lien my paycheck because of the back child support that I owe. And also, in addition to that, just the cost of living. And for them to say, you know, that somehow that's my fault, when the policies of George Bush and his bogus war on terror has caused people to go and lie on applications, I think is the issue.
All right, 1-800-449-8686 is part of our roundtable on Vote 2004, who you're going to vote for. We're talking with Jeff Dowder. He is a lifeguard. Are you still employed there?
I'm not currently employed at Rivas Park, no.
Okay, but you are working as a lifeguard.
That is correct, yes, sir.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Mr. Dowder is a man who lied on his application to be a lifeguard. He didn't know CPR. As the result of you not knowing CPR, sir, that boy drowned.
Well, no, see, that again, that's slanderous, in my opinion, because it's slander. And also, that's not why he died. Why he died was the policies of the George Bush administration not making new jobs up. And so I had to go out desperate to
So you were so desperate for work.
As millions of Americans are, Mr. Henry, yes.
All right, you were so desperate for work that you lied on the application. Say, do you feel at all responsible for this boy's death?
I feel very, very bad. I told the young boy's mother that I felt very, very bad. I told her that I felt that somehow it was my responsibility, even though a lot of it had to do with George Bush. And I'll tell you something that moved me a great deal. I explained to her, and we were there, the sheriff had arrived, and they had, I think, they basically had, you know, said the kid is probably dead, and the coroner's department was there, and I said to her, this is what George Bush has probably done, because I wouldn't have lied on my application. And you know what she did? She shook my hand, and she said, you know what? I can see your point, too. And to me, that's
well, that I'll tell you what, any mother who has just suffered the loss of a child as the result of, you know, I think...
If you say it's the result of me, I think you're in some dangerous territory. I just told you that the Bush administration of George Bush has not created jobs at the level of what he promised.
So a mother stands there having just lost her child.
I understand all of that, Mr. Henry, and I understand it is a terrible moment for that mother. But she shook my hand. When I explained to her how George Bush probably killed her kid, she shook my hand and said, I can see your side of the argument, too.
Well, how can a woman that has just lost her son to a drowning sit there and be objective?
Well, I chalk it up personally to human nature, and I think I chalk it up to the infinite ability of the human soul to forgive, because she knows the policies of the administration of the George Bush as well as everybody else, and that's how I'm saying that.
Okay, so for the record, Mr. Dowder, because I'm a father of four, I hold you responsible. I also...
Well, you can't do that logically.
I also hold responsible the individuals that hired you for not testing your knowledge of CPR, and that is an emergency resuscitation, a cardiac pulmonary resuscitation method. That's what CPR stands for, correct?
That is correct, yes.
All right, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. We'll go over here to Buffy on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, Buffy.
Yeah, my point is that you had other options besides working as a lifeguard. I mean, gentlemen, how old are you, 30, 35?
I'm 28 years old.
28 years old? Have you ever had a job in your life?
Of course I have.
Okay, so you
of course
had other
I have.
Options. You had other options besides lying on applications.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our children.
I did a lot of framing carpentry. I've also been a cement finisher, but most of the construction jobs around here have gone all union. Also, I worked for a couple of department stores doing seasonal work, but...
How many children do you have?
What?
How many children do you have?
I currently have a daughter.
And how old is she?
She's four.
Four. I have a 19-month-old and I have a 17-year-old. Would you like it if your four-year-old was out there with a lifeguard that was sitting there flirting or talking to a woman and not paying attention to your child?
first of all, CPR is not everything that people says it is.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
When a
I've surfed since I was
water,
10. I've surfed since I was 10, so
CPR
I know how to swim. Don't you think
CPR does revive people.
Don't you think it's reasonable to assume that if a kid's got a bathing suit on, he's got some idea as to what, you know, that water, you know, like he knows how to float in it and
so
stuff?
Do you think it's reasonable, then, that your four-year-old could be standing there and accidentally fall in the water and not realize that she can't swim in 6 foot of water and the lord standing there talking to a girl?
Well, wait a second.
So
if my daughter's in a bathing suit, obviously she knows how to swim.
In our country, President Bush has done more for our country than Clinton would ever do.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding
you. Crazy?
We had a man in office, Clinton, that lied on the stand, that swore on a Bible to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you die.
Yeah, but no little kid drowned because Monica Lewinsky and him were grappling on the floor.
He died because of the fact that you weren't paying attention because you were too busy trying to get it on with the little girl.
Ma'am, I wasn't trying to get it on with anybody.
Well, let's be clear here if I could jump in. Were you making time with some chick? Is that it?
I was talking to a girl that was there currently at the pool, yeah. And I want to make the statement, CPR doesn't bring back the dead. Contrary to popular opinion, it doesn't bring back the dead.
But it can revive a person whose breathing has stopped momentarily, and you might have been able to revive that boy had you known CPR.
That is correct. I totally agree with that.
Well, that's what the lady's saying.
And I agree with her.
But you were too busy talking to a woman.
No, that's not why. Bush, if it would have been, if he'd made more jobs, I wouldn't have had to lie about knowing pulmonary
cancer.
I don't even know what it stands for.
You could have went to work at McDonald's.
Yeah, okay.
I'm
going to go to work at McDonald's.
I work for a hotel corporation, and all these people out here that want to say that they can't find a job, that's a bunch of bull.
Well, what are you saying about
every day?
What am I supposed to do at McDonald's?
Excuse me?
What am I supposed to do at McDonald's?
You could be a cashier.
Are you telling me I'm going to stand there in one of those hats? First of all...
Oh, so now your pride's in the way.
Well,
I
got a kid to support, okay?
Let me ask you a question,
I've surfed, okay?
Your pride wasn't in the way.
Wait
a minute.
What?
Your pride was not in the way when you made that four-year-old to pay child support.
Right.
So your pride should not be in the way to get a job to help pay and support that child.
It ain't about my pride. And also, how do you know I wouldn't have to lie on the McDonald's application? They ask you, do you know fry bin work? Have you had experience around fry bins and malt machines? No and no. Do you want me to lie there, too? Do you want me to lie? Do you realize what hot grease is the same thing?
Let me tell you something. I'm in a management position at a hotel. I would hire people with that experience if they showed effort that they want to work.
So, Buffy, are you a management person? You're an employer?
I'm a management person at a hotel corporation.
If somebody lies on an application...
If you lie on an application, that is actually against the law. It's automatic.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the desperate area that I got shoved into.
Okay,
really? You know you can be sued for that?
Buffy, thank you for your call. 1-800-449-8686. Well... 1-800-449-8686 is our number. Jeff Dowder, he is currently employed as a lifeguard still. If you could get that double check, Janice, I'd like to find out, because Mr. Dowder was working as a lifeguard who he has no knowledge of CPR. A child drowned on his watch. He's blaming the job creation policies of George Bush. If there were more jobs created by Mr. Bush, he wouldn't have had to lie on his application to say he knew CPR. 1-800-449-8686. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Fair and balanced without the porn. Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
I will let you read your statement, Mr. Dowder. 1-800-449-8686. Jeff Dowder joins me. One of many citizens we're talking this week on who you're going to vote for in the fall. You're voting for John Kerry because you like his so-called job creation policies. I'd really like to know what those are. I'd really like to know what his job creation policies are. They're about as specific, maybe, as George Bush's job creation policies were. But anyway...
Well, Mr. Henry, first of all, you know, what did George Bush do? He didn't give me a job at all. And the little and the kid is down at the bottom of the pool dead, and people are saying to me, you're not allowed to talk to a girl? Since when is it illegal to talk to a girl in the United States of America? The last time I checked, this is a free country with a constitution. Now, the statement that I wanted to read...
Well, that statement is so idiotic, I don't want to comment on it.
Well, you can call me names if you want.
I didn't call you a name, sir. I said the statement you made was idiotic, but read your statement.
I want to say, first of all, publicly to the Mitchell family, that I join in your grief, and I too, am a victim of the Bush administration. I want to also say that if I don't know CPR, how come they hired me? I did say that I knew it. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. But how come they hired me? Because I don't even know what CPR stands for. And I know you just mentioned it, Mr. Henry.
Cardiopulmonary resuscitation, meaning the heart.
Okay, I didn't know that.
And well, okay.
Well, I want to finish my statement if I can.
I want to get to some phone calls, sir. 1-800-449-8686. Roberta, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Yes, hi.
Hi,
sir,
Roberta.
I really have never heard anything like this. You are responsible for your actions.
Yes, I am.
You lie. I'm sorry. You lied
I'm
when
totally
you took the job and you caused a young man's death.
Mm-mm.
It is your
no, I didn't cause his death.
It is
George
your
responsibility.
It is your
creation.
Responsibility when you take a job to know the details of the job.
Yes.
If you cannot perform that job, you don't take that job.
Why did they
you,
not?
And I am not a fan of Bush. But you and you alone and the people that hired you
are
responsible. You are responsible for the death of someone you don't know.
Right.
And you don't know what kind of life you took.
Right.
You don't know what that young man would have been
so
for this world.
Let me jump in
you
here,
are,
if I could, Roberta. You're saying, Jeff, you agree with this lady that you're responsible for that kid's death?
Yeah. And George Bush made me responsible for it.
No, that's
not,
garbage.
I
you made yourself responsible.
I don't disagree with you.
You are responsible for what you do.
Ma'am, can
you're
I...
like a child.
No,
like
I'm
a 10-year-old child
who
won't take responsibility for their actions.
Right now, the Bush administration has got...
Will you listen to yourself, man, with his Bush administration this and Bush...
Well, why do you think John Kerry... If everybody wants to vote for him and everybody hates Bush... Because
I don't see everybody hating Bush. I say there's a lot of people that don't like it. A lot of people don't like Kerry. Okay?
Look, I only lied once on a lifeguard application. That was about
you
the CPR.
You lied enough to cause the death of someone. That's it. That's it.
Okay, let me ask you a question.
No, you let me finish. I fault the people that hired you because they didn't test you. And they're at fault also.
Well,
you should never have had that job. There are other jobs you could have had where you would not have put someone's life in danger. And you should have stepped away from the young woman when you heard that there might be a problem.
Okay, can I say
it's
something?
It's your fault.
Can I say something?
Go ahead.
Now you may
all right.
Certainly.
Okay. Oh, so it's my fault.
That's right.
And it's the fault of Reeves Park parking wreck.
Right.
So why can't you be open-minded enough to also add in George Bush?
Because
he is not directly responsible
for your actions.
You're narrow-minded.
You are responsible. You're not a child. You're an adult. You are responsible.
You're not getting what we're saying, Jeff.
And you guys are not getting what I'm saying. I'm telling
because
you right now the banking...
stupid, asinine perspective.
The banking laws in this country... and
oh, now the banking laws. All right, hold on for a minute. 1-800, thank you very much, Roberta. 1-800-449-8686. Mr. Dowder was a lifeguard. A boy drowned. He's blaming the Bush administration. Phil Henry Show.
And now more on the Phil Henry Show.
See your responsibility. All right, we're back. 1-800-449-8686. We're on here with Jeff Dowder. And Mr. Dowder was talking with us about the this incident with this boy drowned, and you are not taking responsibility at all. You say it's the Bush administration's fault because you were so desperate to find a job, you lied on the lifeguard application that said, do you know, it's a CPR. Okay?
Look, Mr. Ray, I'm not shirking my responsibility. I think what's happened to Doran Mitchell is a terrible thing, and I do take responsibility for it. But, and here's the bottom line on everything that I've been saying. Why don't anybody feel sorry for me? Because I can't get a job. And my ex-wife, who is now claiming through her attorney that she suffers partial paralysis from an automobile accident she was in, that's what she's claiming through her attorney. And so she's, quote, unable to support our daughter, end quote. Okay? Right away, I think there's something, I got to throw the flag on that, okay? I think that's just crap. And still, I got to get a job to come up with the back child support.
You owe $212,000 in back child support. Is that correct?
That's what the state of California says.
Okay. Your wife has been in an automobile accident and partially paralyzed?
That's what she's claiming through her attorney. Okay.
Where is she paralyzed?
She's claiming from the waist down.
So she can't work.
Well, you know, that's very convenient for her to say that she can't work. The day the Bush administration gets their policies together is the day that I won't have to lie about no one CPR or whatever it is, and then we can get kids out of the bottoms of pools. But right now, the Bush administration can't pull its act together, and we got kids laying in the bottoms of pools from here clear to Maine. And I think that's a tragedy.
1-800-449-8686. Let's go over to Heidi. Heidi, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi.
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to say, you know, I think this is, I've been a teacher for 10 years, and I've taught all ages, junior high, high school, and you know, I think this is one of the most, it's such an example of putting responsibility on somebody else. You know, there's
no excuse for it. You sound just like the other two people that called in.
Now, sir, sometimes, you know, if you hear it enough, maybe you should start listening.
Look,
you know,
I take responsibility. The kid is dead, and I should have known CPR, but I didn't.
Correct.
See?
How can you even begin to blame that on somebody else?
How come everybody else gets to blame the George Bush policies and I don't?
I didn't say I did.
That's the other thing I get to, you know, that nobody talks about.
What do you mean, how come everybody else gets to blame them? If you're going to blame the George Bush job creation policies for a lack of employment, you've got to do it in a semi-sensible way.
Well, Mr. Henry, you, like so many of your call, like this lady, you think sensibility is your own little domain and everybody else doesn't make sense. Look, this lady,
sir,
you're a school teacher.
You don't know anything about me.
I don't know
where I've been.
Are you a school teacher? You just told me you're a school teacher.
I have lived all over the world. I have lived all over the world.
Have you lived in Africa?
I have not lived in Africa.
Okay, so you haven't. See, right there you lied. And it's an easy thing to lie.
And it's easy to lie in other countries, too.
It slips into our language.
This is the until people start looking in the mirror and saying, you know what, I'm in charge of what happens to me in my future, and blaming everyone else, and blaming somebody else, it's not going to change. I believe this is endemic. This is what's happening in our schools. It's like a student looking at me and saying, being angry because they aren't passing, because they refuse to do any of the work.
All right, I'm now going to give you what you want. Here goes. You ready? Yay. Great speech. You know, you ought to be the running mate of John Kerry.
Well, your sarcasm, sir, doesn't detract from the truth of what the lady just said.
I look in the mirror and I say, Jeff, you are getting screwed from Bush. Okay.
No.
But then I also say, it's bad that I was there when I felt bad. And
what did you do when they said there's a kid lying at the bottom of the pool?
I went over to check. It's the first thing you're going to do. I went over and I checked, and I verified that there was a kid down there.
Well, then
and
what?
You let him stay there?
I'm sorry?
You didn't get in immediately and get him out?
Well, that's the question. See, that's the question that I've got, okay? There's a gray area of where my responsibilities end.
Oh, no, dear. There's
well,
not.
Are you a lifeguard?
When I walk into that classroom, you know what? Whatever happens in that classroom is my responsibility. And it doesn't matter if I think somebody, some other politician at the national level is responsible for something. What goes on?
It's a gray area.
To me and the students.
Wait a second. What do you mean it's a gray area? You went over and checked and you saw a kid at the bottom of the pool. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Then what did you do?
I verified that that was the fact.
Then what did you do?
I called, well, first of all, I called Mrs. Rodriguez, who's part of the rec support.
You didn't dive into the water to get the kid out of there?
Again, there's a gray area.
What gray area, man?
No.
Are you a lifeguard?
My 15-year-old niece is sitting next to me, and she is astounded at how absolutely dumb that is.
No. You gotta understand. I'm at the pool.
Plain and simple.
I'm at the public pool right now. Okay, and there's kids all over the place here, over the place. There could be, and if you, unless you've been a lifeguard, Heidi, you are not going to know this. There could be right now where I'm standing. There could be six or seven dead kids in this pool right now. There's no way.
Didn't I hear you say at the beginning that two other kids came up and said their friend slipped and fell into the pool?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, right there.
Well, what do you mean right there? I told you. Just because you slip and fall in a pool doesn't mean you drown. God.
The kids come up and say, hey, our friend, they slipped and fell, they're not going to do that just for the heck of it.
Well, all right. I went over, I verified it, but as
and
I said...
And you didn't let him stay there.
Did you try to jump into the water, sir, and get him out, which would be the instinct that I think most human beings would have?
I did what they tell me to do, which is to inform Mrs. Guerrero, she's in charge of Parks and Rec.
What the hell are you talking about, man? Are you a lifeguard?
No, I'm not, man. That's what I'm trying to tell you. I don't know CCR. I don't know any of the life-saving preliminaries.
CPR, man.
I'm sorry?
CPR.
Takes 10 minutes to learn.
Oh, well, hey, I got a job for you over at the Revis Park pool, then. Look, I slipped on a banana peel once. Does that make me a monkey?
The point is, you know, whether you're responsible for this child...
Nah, there's no getting through
this. Death is not. All right.
What? Look at that.
Okay, we've lost Heidi. Let me get over to our another phone call here. Maria, hi, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Maria?
Yes,
go
hi.
Ahead, ma'am. Yeah, hi.
Hi, I'm in my car, so I hope I don't lose the connection.
Yes, ma'am.
I just have 2 points. Number one, no administration owes anybody a job. Their policies create an economic environment for job growth, and that doesn't happen overnight.
Can you hold on for a minute?
What?
Hold on. Yeah, I got one dead kid, man. I don't need another one. I'm on the job right now.
Go ahead, Maria.
Okay. Well, my second point is that I'd like to ask this guy what his job title was.
I'm sorry.
What's his job title?
You broke up. What'd you say?
What was his job title?
Oh, my job title was, I think it was lifeguard.
Right, and what does that mean, lifeguard? When you said in the beginning that your snap decision was, oh, the kid had swim trunks on, so he must know how to swim.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, everybody at the pool is there to swim, so why bother having a lifeguard?
In case they get drowned, in case they get drowned.
In case they get drowned. And how do you know if they get drowned?
Jeff, in case they get drowned.
Oh, excuse me. I guess I didn't know I was sitting here on the William F. Buckley Show.
Drowned, man. It's not a hard word. Okay. So, in case they drowned, is that why you are there?
Lifeguard, the technical term, and it was explained to me by Mrs. Guerrero and Mr. Pastorak, who both run Park and Rec, is I'm guarding lives. Technically, once the kids land at the bottom of the pool and you don't see any movement, is that a life now or... Because I don't see nothing in my job title, dead bodyguard.
Is this a joke? Because
are you
I'm
kidding?
Absolutely.
Are you
a real guy with a real situation?
Are you joking with us or something?
Mr. Henry, I'll tell you right now, I'm being sued by the Mitchell family, and I'm also in very hot water with the county, so I don't think that I'm... If you think it's a joke, it's not funny to me.
Well, what do you mean your job title doesn't mean guarding dead bodies?
I'm simply saying, sir, that by all viewpoint, it looked like the kid... Was croaked.
I can't believe this guy.
Okay, fine. Great. I mean, have a nice life.
This takes the cake.
It really does, Jeff. And I would say that...
Hold on for a minute. Did you hear about the kid last week that died? Yeah. What?
All right, Maria, thank you. Who are you talking to?
I'm talking to these two kids over here, and I know them. It's the Pastorak brothers. Hey, hey, Joey, Jimmy, you hear about the kids at the bottom of the pool last week? I didn't go get him either, man. I didn't go get him either.
Mr. Doubter?
Hold on for a minute. I didn't go get him. Yeah, I hope I see you down there. Yeah, this job sucks.
Well, I don't even know how the hell it is you still have a job, considering the fact that, as you say, there's one dead kid.
Yeah, hold on. Look at this. Yeah, what are you guys going to do with that, huh? That doesn't look like a noodle to me, man. That's not a swim noodle to me.
All right, look, I got to get on with my show, okay?
Hold on for a minute. Don't be splashing me, kid. Okay, see, look at. Hold on for a minute. You got my dew wet? My hair, you got my dew wet? Yeah, yeah. That's got a sting, man.
What did you do, hit the kid?
I told him not to splash the hair. That's all I asked. The hair, you can splash me, but the hair... I hate this job.
Okay, Jeff Doubter. So he just beat up some kid, got his hair wet, another kid's drowned, and it's all George Bush's fault. It's glad to be very informative, isn't it? It's a nice thing to be informative, I should say, on this program. I'm glad that we put forward an opinion that's expressed by so many others. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. All the way to the FBI. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
By the way, on our website, as you know, we feature Phil's DVD pick of the week. We haven't changed it. I was on vacation last week. And we have our scrapbook photo of the week. This one you might enjoy. It's a caricature of me dressed as Margaret Gray from the 1996 or a 1996 Miami Herald article. And our pick of the week is In the Heat of the Night, the film with Sidney Poitier and Rod Steiger. And we are also now going to be quoting our favorite line from the movie. So you'll see that in the banner. And you can click on that banner. You can go to Amazon and order the movie. In the Heat of the Night's classic flick. And the best line in the movie, spoken by the character Purdy, as played by James Patterson, is, "You turn my little sister into a field slut?" So pick it up, In the Heat of the Night, available at Amazon and other fine grocery stores. 1-800-449-8686. Time now for our flashback. Paul McNamara, a gentleman who's running for Congress, was on our show last night. He's also a landlord and a property owner. He believes that the rents are very low, that renters are getting away with murder, and that he would like something, just anything, to sort of offset the cheap rents. He wants them to start doing chores, like washing his car, walking his dog, and scraping the barnacles off the bottom of his boat. Here's Paul McNamara.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
I was just listening on the radio and everything, and I understand that this man is running for congressman and all this kind of stuff. I would just like to say that I think that this man is a most selfish person, first of all, because the elderly, they've already put in this time. They don't need to have to do your chores to help you out. Apparently you have plenty of money, and you've got a yacht and all this kind of stuff. So why are you making older people, you know, have to work your chores and do all this kind of stuff? I think that
it's
is so unfair of you.
It's a good question.
That it just
Paul, what do you say to that?
It makes me so mad. I would really like to
what do you
say more than I'm saying right now on the radio.
All right, Paul, what do you say to that?
Well, let me just step in, Tanya, and say, don't be swayed, Tanya. I know I'm like you. I start to feel sorry for a lot of these elderly people, but believe me, they've got the last nickel that they ever, you know, they got the first nickel they ever made. And we like to say they got the short arms and the deep pockets. Don't feel too sorry for a lot of these people. They pretend like they're eating cat food. And this kind of thing, and who knows, late at night, you know, 2 a.m.
No. Let me interrupt you, first
yes,
of all.
Yes, ma'am.
You are a very selfish person. Okay?
No, ma'am.
Need to have elderly people that are trying every, that is on a fixed income, okay? My mother is on a fixed income right now, and she can't even get
a lot of them say
she
they
has
are.
To pay $150 for one little bottle of medicine.
Well, that's
and here
what they
you
say.
Are. You're wanting these people to do your chores for you? What kind of person are you?
No, ma'am, but here's the
there
thing.
There is no way
when
I would
they
ever
say,
vote on you.
If they say they're on a fixed income, How do you know for a fact? I know a lot of these people are on fixed income.
Look, if you rented one of my apartments, I can tell you, if you wanted to stay, what I would want you to do
is... I wouldn't rent from you.
All right, but let's forget about you.
I won't even vote for you.
Well, ma'am, I'm in the 38th Congressional District. I'd like you to consider my candidacy, because if, for instance, you rented from me, or let's say your mother did, it's not a difficult thing to pick leaves off the roof in the eaves. You can do it. It takes 5 minutes.
Now, are you saying you'd have this woman's mother picking leaves?
Are you kidding me? For elderly people. You know, you've got enough money, apparently, that you're fine, okay? Why don't you get off your lazy butt and you get out there and pick up the leaves and you pick up the gum off the porches and you do all that kind of stuff.
They've already did their due. I've done all these jobs. What I'm saying is the state of California is taking more than a fair share of property tax from me. How do I make up for that? If I can get a little boy who is a beautiful little boy and I ask him to scrape the gum off the steps, or, you know...
You're not talking about little boys. You're talking about elderly people.
Yes.
Okay?
Well, we put a safety rope on them.
They are on fixed incomes. And I'm telling you right now, they can't even afford their medicine.
I think a lot of them...
Congressmen are people that want to be congressmen like you.
Ma'am, no, you're wrong. I think a lot of these people, they fake eating cat food. If you want to do something for elderly people...
Well, I want to jump in. Hold on for a minute.
Give them where they can get Medicaid and sick care and have their prescription gauged to them.
I tie your mother to a safety rope. She would not be in any danger. We get her to scrape the leaves out of the gutters, and
you
it's
over in
5 minutes.
You know what? My mother is in a wheelchair right now. She can't even go to the bathroom without wheeling herself to the bathroom.
That's what she wants you to believe.
Wait a minute. Are you saying she can't even afford her medicine right now?
We can hoist her up with pulleys.
Wait a minute, I want to find out.
Are you saying?
How am I sick?
If voted on you, they'd be crazy as hell.
Ma'am, I can tell you right now that a lot of these elderly people fake it. Are you sure she can't walk?
You know what?
Are you sure she can't walk?
You are such a bogus person.
Well, if I'm bogus, I can tell you this much: your grandmother, your mother, whoever you're speaking of, needs to be checked out so that she's not manipulating her younger people into feeling sorry for her. So this is what I stand for. I'm standing against these elderly people that are faking it. All right?
You know what?
They pretend like they're eating cat food. That's probably tuna. Who knows?
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
Standing there with a can of Sheba, and they probably loaded it up with some nice chicken of the sea. You never know. All right, 1-800-449-8686. We got some more flashbacks for you. We have a mailbag tonight. Shaq is going to Miami. Well, I guess he got to Miami, didn't he? And boy, would Miami rolled out the red card. They turned into Mount Pilot for a day down there. They got so small town. It's all coming up on the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Sandy Berger was taking some classified documents from the National Archives. Oh, no, Hendry, you're not going to get on 9/11, the war on terror, and Bush again. Please, dear God, no. Yes, I am. I'll get into the juicy stuff later. I'll talk about Shaq. We got Art Bell coming up. Art Bell and General Johnson Jameson will join us about the anniversary of our moon landing. Did you know that? That this is the, what is this, 2099 3+2 ÷ 4? 35 years, baby, since we landed on Luna. And it ain't been the same since. We also have a mailbag and other fun things here on the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Well, I got to talk about this. Wouldn't I be remiss if I didn't mention? Just look. Didn't I say it's impossible for any reasonable human being, anybody who really is looking for the truth, that is. I don't know how many people there are who are looking for the truth. That one's a toss-up. In America today, it's almost like Diogenes looking for the honest man, right? Where are you really going to find somebody who really wants the truth? You can find all kinds of people who want to be right, but that's not the same thing as wanting the truth. There's all kinds of people who want to prove their point is right. Like today, Blubberass was quoted as saying, well, my movie is of my version of the facts. Dig that. You like that one? I thought is that making it, putting a smile on your face? Blubberbutt says his movie, Fahrenheit 9/11, the temperature at which his fat is smoldering, that is actually his version of the facts. In other words, the sun rises in the east, but what's your version of that? Well, my version of the sun rising in the east is that it rises in the west. There you go. That's my version of the facts. Anyway, this guy Sandy Berger. Now, you have to hear this. This is really important. Well, I guess you don't have to hear it if you don't want to hear it. Like I said, if you want the truth, listen to this. If you don't, well, then there's probably something halfway decent on television, but nothing as good as this show. I can guarantee you that. I'm looking at Forehead Boy right now, and he's got some bald-headed freak. You don't want to watch that. All right. Sandy Berger was the former national security advisor under President Clinton. In other words, he held the same job for Clinton that Condoleezza Rice holds with President Bush. And there have been many great and lesser than great people who've occupied that position down through the years. During the Clinton administration, Mr. Berger is now under criminal investigation for taking highly classified terrorism documents that should have been turned over to the 9/11 Commission. He admits that he did this. The FBI has searched his home and his office. He has voluntarily returned some sensitive documents to the National Archives and admitted he also removed handwritten notes he had made while reviewing the sensitive documents. Some drafts of the sensitive after-action report on the Clinton administration's handling of Al-Qaeda terror threats during December 99's Millennium Celebration are still missing. I'm going to repeat that for you. You got to hear this. Because when this kind of stuff starts coming out, it kind of makes Blubberbutt's movie and all the other people with their smug, self-assured opinions about the war on terror, it really turns their world upside down. As we used to say back when I was in the NOM, we're going to rock someone's world. Berger's home and office were searched. Some drafts of sensitive after-action reports on the Clinton administration's handling of Al-Qaeda terror threats during December 99's Millennium Celebrations are still missing. Now, do you recall that LAX was the target of a potential Al-Qaeda plot, that a man, some Al-Qaeda operative, was stopped in Washington State on New Year's Eve, 1999, going into the year 2000, with explosives? You remember that, right? You understand as well that that man was stopped by a simply very alert Border Patrol officer. This wasn't some interdiction by the FBI. It wasn't some intercession by the CIA. The Clinton administration didn't have any information. They weren't waiting for the guy at the border. It was simply a man doing his job. The Border Patrol, at that time, this man, noting something very unusual and rather nervous about this guy, decided to search his car. If it hadn't been for that one, as far as I'm concerned, that guy ought to get the freaking Congressional Medal of Honor, whoever he is. Do we even know who this man is? If it hadn't been for was it a man? My God, it might have been a woman. Oh, my God. In any event, whoever this person was, if it hadn't been for them, LAX would have been blown into, it would have been blown into six smaller airports. Which might not have been a bad thing if there were no people in there. It would have been blown off the face of the map or whatever the hell this guy had in mind, I don't know. That was not any interdiction on the part of any administration. That was an alert Border Patrol officer, a U.S. officer working the border between Canada and the United States. By the way, thanks a lot, Canada, for yet another terrorist coming south. Gotta love you for that, man. Have you guys done anything to help lately, or are you just sitting up there waiting for the hockey season to start and suffering through the CFL preseason or whatever it is you're doing? Now, that's not what I gotta tell you. Sandy Berger, the former national security advisor, and his lawyer said on Monday he knowingly removed the handwritten notes by placing them in his jacket, pants, and socks, and also inadvertently, quote inadvertently, took copies of actual classified documents in a leather portfolio. By hiding these notes in his socks, you don't think he wanted people to find out that he had them, do you? You don't hide stuff in your socks, folks, if you want people to know you have them. Mr. Berger's statement is, I deeply regret the sloppiness involved, but I had no intention of withholding documents from the commission, yada, yada, yada. Now, let me tell you something. I don't blame President Clinton for 9/11 any more than I blame President Bush. But a lot of people in this country, especially the American people who were asleep at the wheel during the 90s, counting all of their PetSmart stock, the American people who gave the administration and the representatives of this country that we say We want them to listen to us. We gave them no indication that we thought terrorism was a big concern. We just thought they magically had to do something about it while we sat on our fat asses doing nothing. And now we want to blame Bush. Because in the big whopping 8 months that he was president of the United States, whatever the hell it was, 10 months, he should have just corrected every single sloppy problem that ever happened between, you know, the Clinton administration's handoff of this thing and the Bush administration's taking it over. And it was all his fault. To believe that, you have to have the mind of a three-year-old child. To actually believe that, you have to have the world understanding and conception of, like, a fetus. Maybe a particularly dumb fetus at that. Like maybe Michael Moore's kid. I'm joking. I'm not making fun. Does he have any kids? All right. So that means, if you believe it, though, you're going to have to accept a very brutal reality that if Bush had some culpability, Clinton did too. And I've tried to explain what that was. I don't know if it's fallen on deaf ears or not. I mean, I could tell you again the fact that he had an indictment connecting Al-Qaeda with Saddam Hussein, etc. Now we have his national security advisor, his former national security advisor, who has, by the way, been asked to step down from the Kerry campaign, caught in a possible criminal act, and that is trying to abduct or abscond with classified documents and hiding evidence from an independent commission investigating 9/11. What evidence is he hiding? You think he's hiding Bush evidence? You think Sandy Berger's over at the National Archives trying to help out George Bush? He worked for Bill Clinton. I really can't stand the intellectual dishonesty of the whole debate around the Iraq war. The dishonesty and the partisanship and the narcissism and the self-aggrandizement that has surrounded a very desperate war, it makes me want to vomit. Hey, you know what? Bush may lose in November, but I'll tell you this much. When he goes, man, we'll have lost a damn good president who took over a very, very tough situation, a very, very difficult time in the history of this country, and along comes some guy like Kerry who couldn't spell 9/11 if you spotted him the 9 and both the 1s, and he's going to make everything okay. Like I said, I'm a Democrat. I'm voting for a Republican this November. Sandy Berger trying to rip off information, trying to hide evidence, and trying to steal classified documents. The former national security advisor for President Clinton. Late on Tuesday announced he would no longer aid Kerry's presidential bid, saying he didn't want to diminish the work of the 9/11 commission. And he went on to say he didn't want this to be clouded with partisanship. Buddy, this is beyond partisanship, you dumbass. This isn't partisanship, brother. This is hiding evidence from a commission that was impaneled to investigate what happened at 9/11. What are you trying to do, man? Make it squeaky clean for Clinton? Here's the information, and it was a female. It was a woman. Thank God for the women. In December of 1999, U.S. Customs Inspector Diana Dean stopped a driver coming into the United States from Canada. He was driving the last car to come off a ferry that had arrived that day in Port Angeles, Washington. Acting only on her instincts and training, she noticed his suspicious behavior and his unusual answers to her questions. She asked the driver to step out of his car and opened his trunk. What she found were the makings of a bomb. Diana Dean, United States Customs, December of 1999. Wherever you are, baby, that's where you is. Well, we think that, in fact, we're going to send you a complimentary copy of a Citizens Auxiliary Police. I'm joking. But she ought to get something. Maybe, how about a raise? 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. We have a little bit of Shaq news for you. And, of course, we have Art Bell and General Johnson Jameson coming up on The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Ted Bell joins us later on to talk about his reunion services. He has, it's a flashback from our show last night. He has high school reunions at his restaurant, at his steakhouse, and our mailbag as well. And Linda Ronstadt is continuing to sort of stink the news up a little bit. I don't know what it is, but she's still in the news here about when she was on stage at the Aladdin and she was supposedly doing a greatest hits package, which, by the way, it wasn't a greatest hits at all. She just did a lot of, I don't even know if she's got a great, you know, what do you call a greatest hit from Linda Ronstadt? You know, I remember when that album came out, the one with Poor, Poor, Pitiful Me and Blue Bayou, and the program director I had at the time with this was this meathead from San Francisco who wanted to just play the hell out of it. Everybody else is like playing the Sammy Hagar and Montrose records and the stuff that was happening in like the early 80s and late 70s, and I got to play the hell out of Linda Ronstadt, I'm Going Back Someday to Blue Bayou. And all these Warren Zevon. I was never a big fan of that whole singer-songwriter genre. No thank you. I'm not, you know, into the James Taylor school of thought, if you don't mind. It ain't that I think it's some, it's not that I disagree with the politics. It's got nothing to do with politics. It's just not the kind of music that I want to hear. But however, a bunch of people, a bunch of suckers paid money to go see her at the Aladdin. And she got up there and she said, Michael Moore's a great thing and he's a fantastic guy and I'd like to sleep with him someday. And Fahrenheit 9/11 is the greatest movie I've ever seen since Birth of a Freakin' Nation. And with that, the Aladdin official said, well, we knew your music was lousy, but we're willing to keep you on just under principle. But now you're out of here. Apparently, she was extremely obnoxious. She was quoted to one reporter. She said, I was hoping that I was annoying enough that Aladdin wouldn't invite me back. In other words, like she's too cool for Vegas, right? Hey, baby, you're the one that's broke. You're the one who told your manager to go start hunting up some gigs for you because you got no money. You probably packed half of it up one nostril and then maybe 5 years later packed the other half up the other nostril. What do you think? That's just a guess, but I'm guessing that you probably jammed most of the money that you had up both sinuses. What do you call her, a drug user, Phil? Yeah, that's what I'm calling her. I guess, I don't know. How do you like that? She thinks she's too cool for Vegas. Well, it ain't too cool for Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I wouldn't go to Vegas to go see any band that I actually went to see in a 16 or 20,000 seat arena. That's for damn sure. I already had my Jethro Tull experience. That was enough to make me want to drop to one knee and weep into my hands like I just threw a 25-yard interception going the other way. Anyway, Ronstadt is one of a, she's kind of one of a breed. Let me explain to you what's going on here. And here's another thing that you got to be aware of. Back in the 1950s, there was a congressional witch hunt of communists in Hollywood. As the result, anyone who, when they were young, joined the Communist Party, because you have to remember, America in the 30s was an extremely distressed place. It was not a fun time. And Americans were looking for answers. What had gone wrong with our country? Why were people out of work? Why were people starving? What was the answer? And as free people do, we looked around for answers. And some people went to Communist Party meetings. Well, they lived to regret that, because by the late 1940s, when these people were now famous Hollywood writers and actors, it suddenly was something that was bad. It was after World War II. We hated the commies. They were the next big bad thing we had to kick ass on. And anybody that had anything to do with a communist, even if you said, hey, how you doing, man? How's the coffee in this place? You were going to be blackballed out of the business. It didn't matter. You might have seen a communist walking down the street and asked them a freaking time. They would have had your ass blackballed as a commie. Now, they had absolutely no legal right to ask people, to insist that people answer the question, are you now or have you ever been a communist? They had no legal right. And if you took the Fifth Amendment, which is your right under the Constitution, I don't have to answer your stupid insinuating question. That was used as proof that you were a communist. As the result, many people lost their jobs. Many people suffered from this hysteria. Okay, that was the 1950s. Now, what do we got today? Well, we got a generation of performers today in Holly Ass and all these other towns where they think it's just like the 50s all over again. They're being persecuted. And my goodness gracious, they just can't say what they want to say. Linda Ronstadt gets up on a stage, sounds stupid, acts obnoxious, and they say, thank you very much. There's a limousine waiting for you. I bet you there was a limo that took her to the freaking airport. Just get out of our hotel. You're fired. Guarantee she'll be working again. The reason why she's got to take gigs at the Aladdin is the only gigs that she's being offered. Tim Robbins. Does anybody get the irony in a guy like Tim Robbins saying that he's being censored and he's saying it in front of microphones that are broadcasting him around the world? Does anybody get the irony in that, or am I the only one? Guy says, I'm being censored, and he's talking to millions and millions of people. See, they want to believe that they're fighting the righteous fight of the 50s. They want to believe that they're persecuted just like those people. The only thing that's persecuting freaking Tim Robbins might be a particularly inflammatory case of hemorrhoids, but I wouldn't want to know. I don't want to know what's going on in his house. Susan might wear the pants, but I don't want to know about it. These guys kill me with this attitude like there's some sort of a dark cloud has descended in America, and we are being censored. Why, the next thing you know... What? Where? Where is it happening, man? Where's it happening? I'll tell you who's being censored. Cats on the radio like me. That's who's being censored. I'm being censored. I've been told not to say this, not to say that, not to say this, not to say that, and if I do, I'll get fired. Now, folks, that's censorship. Guys all over this country, the same thing. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that. And if you don't, you're going to get fired, okay? Because you ain't Tim Robbins. And you ain't Whoopi Goldberg. And you ain't Linda Ronstadt, man. You're just Joe Blow, schmuck on the radio, okay? And I'm big-time radio management. I'll can your ass if I don't like what you're saying. And who are you going to complain to, huh? Who are you going to talk to, pal? You're just a puny little guy. We don't have a radio press in this country. You can't go running to some reporter because they don't report the radio business with any real seriousness. It's just a gossip sheet. What are you going to do, huh? I'll lose my job before Linda Ronstadt ever sees an unemployment check. Or Whoopi Goldberg or Tim Robbins or any of these lightweights. And when I say lightweight, man, I mean lightweight. Lightweights. Good actors, not taking anything away from them, but these cats, they are absolutely the living end, man. They are lame. They are the living, walking definition of freaking lame. And there's a big, bad, dark... They couldn't sniff Ring Lardner's jockstrap, man. Now, there's a guy that got his ass kicked because of that Hollywood witch hunt. Those people would have to get up on a freaking stepladder to kiss his ass. By the way, you can buy a stepladder at our website, www.philhenryshow.com. All kinds of souvenirs in there. phs@philhenryshow.com is our email address, too. Our website is www.philhenryshow.com. Coming up is Art Bell and General Johnson Jameson on the anniversary of the moon landing on The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
And now it's AM Coast to Coast with Art Bell. If you're calling from west of the Rockies, good for you. And now, here is Art Bell.
Thank you, Ross Mitchell, and a very pleasant good morning to all of you here on the planet Earth. And other galaxies orbiting other heavenly bodies. Those of you listening in the Antarctic weather stations, and to my very special friends, the trappers in northern Canada, a very pleasant good morning and good evening. I'm Art Bell, and this morning, have we got a program for you. General Johnson Jameson will join us from his bunker complex beneath the Saskatchewan crust, 300 feet deep, and we're going to be talking about... We're going to be talking about the moon landing, but we are going to be talking about what you didn't hear about the moon landing coming up. But first, this word from Peenemann Enterprises. Friends, it's possible that you've been exposed to gamma radiation that could alter your body chemistry and genetics, and that when you get angry, you might turn into a large green muscle man with a speech impediment and elastic pants. But now Peenemann Enterprises can help you forget your worries about those embarrassing moments when getting angry in traffic could cause you to pick up someone's car and throw it into the Pacific Ocean. Peenemann Enterprises presents the new Hulk Bong. Get the Hulk Bong, sized perfectly for biochemical mutants with anger issues. The Hulk Bong can accommodate Dave Chappelle-sized lips and half the marijuana output of the Mexican state of Guerrero. Get the new Hulk Bong, new from Heman Enterprises. Now, General Johnson Jameson joins us, and I know we also are going to have some photographs on the website. But General Jameson, I've been looking forward to your visit very much on our program. A very, 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 very wonderful good morning to you, General Jameson. How are you? General Jameson.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, baby. I was having a great dream. I was having a wonderful dream. And, oops, look at that. Anyway, good morning to you, Art.
Good morning to you, General Jameson. And we are celebrating the anniversary, the 35th anniversary of the landing on the moon.
Yes, indeed. It was on July the 20th, 1969, that man walked on the moon for the very first time. But, Art, I believe on that day, something else happened.
Yes, and I want to hear exactly what happened on that day. And I also would alert people that you'll be posting photographs on your website. Is that correct, General Jameson?
That is absolutely correct, Art.
And tell me what you feel happened. Now, we know this much. We know that Neil Armstrong navigated the lunar landing module along with Buzz Aldrin, who was his co-pilot, down to the surface of the moon. Then what?
Well, Art, approximately 11 hours later, when Houston gave them the green light to leave the landing module and commence descent down to the moon's crust, it was at that time that I believe, and I have photographic proof, they were greeted by intelligent life.
Now, did we not see television pictures?
Yes, those pictures were dummied up. Those were two actors on a soundstage. So the people who believe the moon landing was a conspiracy are half right. We did land on the moon, but what we saw was direct from the MGM lot in Culver City. Buzz Aldrin and Mike Aldrin, Mike Love, right? Wasn't he the lead singer of the Beach Boys?
Yes, he was, but he didn't land on the moon.
All right, okay, that's my mistake then. Who landed on the moon?
That was Neil Armstrong.
Neil Armstrong, okay, I thought it was Mike Love.
So you thought he sang I Get Around and Walked on the Moon?
Yes, I did. Well, it's an understandable mistake. So whatever the hell his name was, it meets these intelligent beings.
And at that time, you believe, was our first intelligent contact with life on another planet?
Well, technically on a moon, not another planet, but a moon. However, I have on my website right now, Art, and if you can dial it up there, www.ohsweetgodamilonely.com, you'll see the photographs.
All right, I'm looking now, General Jameson. Now, this is a photograph of what?
This is a photograph of the moon and the being that this is an actual photograph that, what's his ass, Mike Love or Neil Armstrong or I don't know who it was, Carl, the bass player, whoever it was.
What gives you the idea the Beach Boys landed on the moon?
I don't know. I was listening to Kiss Me Baby a moment ago and it just reminded me of my 3 or 4 girlfriends ago. Anyway, so there it is.
All right, now I'm looking at this photograph. This is an actual photograph of the moon?
Yes.
And it's an actual photograph at that time of the being that they met?
Yes.
All right, I have to tell you, General Jameson, this photograph, it looks like a E.T. doll stapled to a basketball that's been spray-painted gray.
Well, no, that's what it looks like. But
that is the moon.
Yes, that's the moon, and that's the being, yes.
All right, now let's move on to the next photograph. What is this photograph of?
This is one of their domiciles. Excuse me, I just had some Captain Crunch. I just reverted. And you'll see here the photograph taken by Buzz Armstrong or Neil Love or whatever the hell his name was.
Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin.
Buzz Aldrin, okay. He took it. This is their domicile.
This is where these people, these moon creatures live.
Yes.
Again.
What are you going to find fault with this one, too?
Well, it looks like an egg carton.
Well, I don't give a sweet crap what it looks like. I'm telling you what it is.
That's where moon people live.
Yes, that's where moon people live. You're starting to piss me off a little bit, Art.
Well, no, I'm trying to. Now, let's move on here to the next photograph.
This is the one that I am excited about. This is an actual picture of their spaceship taking off after they, introduced themselves to General Armstrong and Private Aldrin. And then they got into their spaceship, naturally, and they had to get going. This is a photograph.
All right, I'm looking at this photograph. Now, there's some kind of writing on the bottom of this photograph.
Well, no, it's on the bottom of the craft.
Yes. and I can't make it out.
Well, we can't either, Art, and maybe we can with the help of your listeners.
All right. How do you propose that?
Well, we've been able to get code. Now, there are 14 separate symbols in this code, and we are able to approximate what the symbols represent. 14 different symbols, and each one corresponds with a number. So if there's 14 symbols, I will give you, as they come up on our computer, what those symbols represent and which number they are, and maybe we can make head or tail out of this crazy thing, this whole goofy moon thing, which I'm so in love with it.
Wait, you're turning into Charo on me?
No, I'm sorry. All right, so here it is.
All right, so there are 14 symbols on the bottom of this spaceship, which, by the way, looks like a pie tin, but
don't piss me off, man.
All right, no problem.
All right. All right, symbol number one is the letter K. Symbol number one is the letter K.
Number one is K.
Symbol number five is the letter H.
All right, symbol five is the letter H. One is K, five is H.
Yes, symbol number nine is the letter H.
All right, so there's two H's. Symbol one is K, symbol five is H, symbol nine is H.
Symbol 13 is the letter I.
Symbol 13 is the letter I.
Symbol number seven is the letter S.
Symbol number seven is the letter S. All right.
Symbol 10 is the letter E. E as in eel or I or yee-hee or...
I get it. All right, so symbol 10 is E.
Yes, symbol number four is also the letter E.
Symbol number four is the letter E.
Symbol number eight is the letter T as in Tom or Tort or Tipsy or... or...
Thank you. All right. Symbol 8 is T. Symbol 6?
Symbol number 6 is the letter A, as in alphabet, apple, or...
Ow! Symbol 6 is A.
Yes, I hope I wasn't too dramatic there.
No, but I suspect that... Can I ask you a question at this point?
Sure.
What is it tonight? Is it the Cabernet? Is that what we're doing tonight? We're going for the red eye, huh?
That's none of your business.
All right, so symbol six is A. Are we at symbol number six, Janice Ungaro, who is helping produce my show because Phil Hendry's out vomiting right now or attempting suicide? All right, what is the next one?
Symbol number 11 is D.
Symbol 11 is D.
Symbol number two is the letter O.
Symbol two is the letter O. All right.
Symbol number 14 is the letter P, as in Paul or Poughkeepsie or...
Jesus.
Symbol number three is B.
All right, symbol 14 is P as in Paul, symbol three is B as in boy, and finally?
And symbol number 12 is R, the letter R. Now, I don't know what this represents. Perhaps we have some astronomers listening in your audience tonight who can help us.
All right, if there's anyone listening, you can call the Art Bell Show here this evening at 1-800-449-8686. If you've been able to correlate these symbols, and perhaps we can give you a prize or not. I don't know. I am not in charge of the Phil Hendry Show. I don't know whether or not they would allow me to give away merchandise for free from their souvenir shop. But I can only hope. And if you go to the website, you can see what you say is a flying saucer, General Jameson. Good for you. Looks like a pie tin to me.
Oh, man, I'm gonna start swinging.
All right. We'll be right back here on the Art Bell Show, here on the Phil Hendry Show. Coast to coast. Overnight.
Art Bell will be right back on the Phil Hendry Show.
Ooh. Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Pull your head out of your ass. Plug into the world. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
And now, back to Coast AM with Art Bell.
And we are back here with General Johnson Jameson, who is on the line with us from Saskatchewan. And we are talking with him about symbols that he saw on the bottom of a flying saucer. He says it's a flying saucer. I have no reason to doubt him, even though it clearly says Marie Callender's On the side of it looks like a pie tin. But in any event, the are you back with us?
Yes. Were you saying something about me?
No, nothing at all. I was talking about how brilliant you are.
Thank you. All right, so Art, these are the symbols. Symbol 1 is K, symbol 5 is H, symbol 9 is H, symbol 13 is I, symbol 7 is S, symbol 10 is E, symbol 4 is E, symbol 8 is T, symbol 6 is A, symbol 11 is D, symbol 2 is O, symbol 14 is P, symbol 3 is B, and symbol 12 is 2.
What is that music behind you?
I got a movie on, don't worry about it. So what, you got a call?
Yeah, yes, I do. Let's go over here, and welcome to the Art Bell program. Sean, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good, Sean. General Jameson is on the line with us from Saskatchewan. Sean, you've heard the codes that the general has been giving us. Do you know what that code spells out?
I do.
All right, Sean, would you please now, for our coast-to-coast audience and around the world, for the...
Oh, will you get on with it?
I'm sorry. Go right ahead and tell us what it spells out, Sean.
It spells out, Kobe has the drip.
Kobe has the drip, General Jameson?
Yes, let me just feed that into the computer. Yep, that's what it says.
All right. Sean, you win a Ted's of Beverly Hills coin purse, which we'll be very happy to send to you if you can stay on the line here, and we'll get your address. All right? Kobe has the drip.
Yes, I'm pretty sure that I'm not saying Kobe has the drip, but at least
that's what they believe on the moon.
Yes.
All right, Sean, hang on the line, Sean. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That is Sean calling from Miami, Florida this evening. Kobe has the drip. Well, isn't that just very adult?
Well, I don't know. That's what it said.
All right, General Jameson, I have to leave now, and I'm disgusted with you. I'm going to go join Ramona now and lay on a rock out in the desert and just look at the night sky. Because things out there are spooky. Woo!
What a ham.
Coast to Coast with Art Bell.
You know, I've never sung along with this, and I just feel the dancing queen, young and green, only filled with cream. I don't know what it is.
Oh, I know the lyrics. Dancing queen, hear the beat of the tambourine. Whoa, yeah.
Whoa, yeah.
You can dance. You can dine.
Dancing and dining.
Yes, having the time of your life. Ooh, ooh, ooh. See that girl. Watch her scream. She is...
I don't think it's watch her scream.
I don't know.
I'm Art Bell.
And I'm General Johnson Jameson.
We're lovers. Go ahead, young man. Oh, good. Thank goodness Art only comes out of retirement every so often. Is he retired or is he not? Every now and again I hear Art popping up. By the way, I'm having a barbecue at my house on Saturday. Thanks for RSVPing, George. I invited George. I ain't heard hide nor hair of the guy. You coming or aren't you, George? I invited everybody over and I sent a nice invitation to him and he ain't said boo. Maybe he's working. Oh, Saturday night? No, he don't work Saturday night.
Art's on Saturday
night. Art's on Saturday night. I didn't invite Art to the barbecue. I invited George. George, wherever you are, man, come to my house. Saturday, dude. Sent you invitation, everything, dude. Hey, listen, the Phil Henry Show website is it's the home of Phil Henry Show material. That's where we have archived literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of bits, hundreds of hours of listening. We have a 30-day archive, so every single full show going back from the present date 30 days into the past, that's all archived for you. So if you missed a show, you missed an hour, you can hear it again. We also have all of our short-form comedy bits that just go, I mean, we got thousands of them, man. Going back 10 years, we have those archived as well. We have a larger repository of radio material than any other website, any other individual show website in the Western world. Now, there may be some, for instance, in the Mongolian steppes, some programming in Sri Lanka. I don't know. They might have some very seriously heavy comedy archives in there, like the Morning Man in Ho Chi Minh City, for all I know. But in the Western world, ours is the biggest. And all you got to do is go to our website, www.philhenryshow.com, and get a Backstage Pass. It's only $6.95, and it's high-quality audio in the archive. Great gifts in the souvenir shop. Grab a Best of Phil Henry CD. Buy it online. Call 877-616-7445. Speaking of Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal was welcomed into the city of Miami as you would have thought it was Mount Pilot, and one of them movie stars was coming to town. You know, I understand sports. You see, I'm not knocking Miami. The same thing happens here. What is it about human beings? We begin to lose all sense of right, wrong, our idea of the universe. You know, they say some schizophrenics can't walk a straight line because their reality is so fractured, things look actually crooked to them. I think that's what happens when it comes to sports. Everything goes out the window. Every reasonable bit of behavior that we ever thought we could engage in is gone. The key to the city? The mayor of the city? You're kidding, right? Look, the guy's going to play for the Miami Heat whether you can't show up or not. Whether you're out there kissing his rear end or you're back at City Hall or whatever the hell passes for City Hall down there these days. When I was there, they didn't even have a City of Miami. You mean they got one now? Every now and again, it goes bankrupt. You know, every 5 years, they got Miami's there, and now it's gone. Now it's there, now it's gone. Miami-Dade, Metro-Dade. Miami-Dade, Metro-Dade. Doesn't know whether it's the Metro or the Miami or the county. They don't know what the hell it is. But, man, they can take time out to introduce themselves, you know, drop to one bended knee and kneel all the way down to the ground and put their lips right on the cement for Shaq O'Neal. Nice guy. Good basketball player. Are we so bored that honest to God, is that how life is? Oh, I gotta go. I hate it.
Now, Phil Hendry.
Mailbag coming up this hour, and Ted Bell. Let me restate what I said about Shaq. I just went over the top a little bit on purpose. I think it's a great thing he's in, honest to God, I'm not kidding. I think it's great that he's in Miami. I don't dislike Shaquille O'Neal. I don't understand. There seems to be a sentiment in Los Angeles that he wasn't as good a guy as Kobe or something. You know, he worked hard. He wasn't the greatest basketball player in the world. I understand that. He couldn't shoot from the outside to save his life. He played defense. He slam dunked. But hey, can you argue with, how many rings they win with Jackson? Three? I mean, three rings. I mean, what am I supposed to, like, find fault with that? I don't have a problem with Shaquille O'Neal at all. Not at all. I mean, my only point is that when we begin to attribute superhuman qualities to these people, like when they do something ordinary, like cut a fart, suddenly it's news. When the rest of us do it, it's, you know, we're ignored. You know, if Shaquille O'Neal wants to become a cop, that's okay. In the meantime, all we can do is find fault with cops. They don't do this right. They don't do that right. They don't arrest right. Hey, why would Shaquille O'Neal want to be a part of the pigs, man? The oppressive, power-mad, racist pig structure. Why would he want to be a part of that? Hasn't he heard? You remember that lady that called the other day? They're all a bunch of Klansmen. I'm glad you think so highly of black men as well, ma'am, that you think they're so feeble-minded that as soon as they become cops, they're just indoctrinated mentally into the whole Klan mentality. If people stopped and actually listened to themselves talk, they would probably never open their mouths again. If people actually stopped and listened to the diarrhea that squirted out of their mouths, and actually heard what they were saying, they wouldn't talk ever again for fear of embarrassing themselves. And that lady calls up and says, these coppers all have a Klan mentality. So what about the black cops? Oh, well, they all get indoctrinated into it as soon as they get into the police department. So the black men have particularly weak minds, because when they get into the police department, they're indoctrinated in the Klan mentality, too. You figure if one guy's immune to that, it'd be a black guy. But no, those guys are so freaking feeble-minded, they become Klansmen. Do you remember that one call I got I'll never forget this one. This was perfect. This was perfect. I remember saying, the reason why there's a preponderance of African-American athletes in all of the major sports, which save hockey, is because the message has been very clearly delivered, not only by society in general, but by the black community particularly, and by that I mean parents and teachers, that the real way to success in today's society for an African-American man is through athletics. Not because that they're physically better at it, but because that's really the best way to achieve success for you. Okay? So all that doctor and lawyer stuff, why don't you just put that on the back burner and go out there and dribble a basketball? Hey, yeah, baby. Right? Now a guy calls up and he says, hey, I was raised in a black community and I never once heard anybody say that we should go play basketball. I never once heard anybody encourage me. I never once heard the society say that that was the best way to go. And I said, okay, sir, then why do you suppose there are so many African Americans that are involved in football, baseball, and basketball? And he said, well, we just physically... And all of a sudden, he started slipping into the old eugenics argument, physically we're better suited for it, and this guy was black. You talk about brainwashed. Hey, maybe that lady was right. 1-800-449-8686. Ah, forget it. Anyway, I'd like to thank General Johnson Jameson for reminding us that it was Mike Love who walked on the moon. Now, 35 years ago, it was indeed the landing on the moon, July 20th, 1969. You know, we look back on that from this perspective today, we go, what's the big deal, right? And you're right, you're asking, what is the big deal? It can really dull in the memory. But I remember that day. I was a 16-year-old high school junior becoming a senior. And at that time, my father was married to some new chick that he was living with out in San Marino. And I was living with my mom. And my dad says, why don't you come over and watch the moon landing today? I said, yeah, okay. So I drove my little beat-up Volkswagen over there. And, well, geez, how old was I? I was 16, yeah. So I drove over there, and he's got it on the TV. And there's Walter Cronkite. Well, in about 13 hours, Neil Armstrong will crawl out of the tin can, all of this stuff. They hadn't yet landed. And it was a big thing. You got to understand. I mean, realize now, yeah, going into outer space, big whoop, dude. I mean, hey, haven't you played Halo? Not only are we in outer space, but the planets are all shaped like donuts. But then, we'd never traveled off of the face of the Earth. We'd never landed. I mean, we traveled off the face of the Earth. We'd never landed on another freaking celestial body. We'd never landed on another object in space. And all of a sudden, there we were, under the American flag. Well, I guess that makes us Nazis, too. Because we took over the whole space race, right? Under the American flag, you had to be proud. And in point of fact, on that day, in the middle of the Vietnam War, in the middle of the civil rights riots and disturbance and real trauma that was happening to this country, the whole world stopped and was proud of this. Swedish newspapers were writing about how Buzz Aldrin was of Swedish ancestry. And the English newspapers were writing about how Michael Collins was of British ancestry. And the Mexicans, they had an angle on something. And the Africans had an angle. And everybody was a part of this thing. These three guys going up into outer space to land on the moon. Now, you know, these days we got a TV camera everywhere. We have toilet cams. We've got... dressing room cams. We have every kind of camera shoved up every orifice so we can see every possible working of the human anatomy. But back then, all we had was the audio because the camera on the lunar landing module hadn't been activated yet. All we could hear is the audio as Neil Armstrong was landing that thing. And you could hear him saying, we're at 20% now and we're at 30%. And little did we know at the time, and it came out later, he was wrestling with that thing. He was way off the landing mark, and it took all of his skill to straighten that thing out so he could get it landed on a pretty flat part of the Sea of Tranquility. In point of fact, that thing was coming down on the side of a mountain. And if that had landed on the side of the mountain, they would have toppled over, and that would have been all over, because it's just not, it's not a very hardily constructed object. So he was going through there was a little bit of panic there as they began to bring that thing down to the surface, but they landed it, and then my old man says to me, hey, listen, you know, the garage door needs painting. How's about you go out there? And I, aha! So that's why I'm over here. Don't worry, I'll come and get you when they come out. So I went out, I started painting the garage door, and finally my old man goes, all right, they got to come out of there. And I went back in, and, of course, my father felt that, everybody felt, landing on the moon, I mean, that was the, he thought that they were going to get swallowed up in some kind of quicksand, that it couldn't possibly support a man's weight and all this, even though the limb was sitting on it. And out they came, and that was the landing on the moon. And, man, nobody had ever seen anything about that. And they actually get TV pictures back from the moon. They were black and white. And if you go to a website called Earth Station One, you can find amazing video, old television video, and you can actually live the entire day because they have the entire, I think, NBC broadcast of that entire day, the commentary. They show the LEM after it lands. They activated the camera, and all you can see is actually one strut. One leg of the ship, and then you're looking at sort of this moon surface, and then, you know, out comes Armstrong. It's pretty heavy. But, you know, people don't think, they don't want to talk about it, because, well, that's just, you know, that was then. Man, you had to have been there that day. It was pretty heavy. Anybody that was there, they understand exactly what I'm talking about. It, like, nothing like that had ever happened before. In fact, I would say it was bigger in terms of the positive emotional impact than 9/11 was negatively. You know what I'm saying? If I could quantify the negative energy in this country after 9/11, larger than that was the positive energy around the moon landing. So that's like how big a day it was. And I guess, do they want to go back to the moon? To do what? I thought maybe they could go up there and drill oil or something. That's just a big ball of crap up there. Drink. I think what they ought to build up there is a nice steakhouse. I'd love that. Fly the cows up there, slaughtered fresh on the moon. All right, 1-800-449-8686. Our mailbag is coming up on The Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry, 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8688.
What the hell? That ain't the mailbag music. Yeah, that came leaping at me. That was like a heart attack. Just, wow! I hate that. I hate it! What are you doing, bud?
I got the wrong one.
Get the right one. You know, it's cut four.
I know. I can read.
Oh, really? Well, then how come you had the wrong one on there? No answer to that, yeah. I didn't think you had an answer to that.
You happy?
Yeah, I'm happy. You can leave now, man.
All right.
Time now for our mailbag. Wait a second. This isn't the mailbag. Here it is. Time now for the Phil Henry Show mailbag, and this comes to me from Sean. Hey, Phil, my favorite line was from the news anchor who has to drink while reporting at the 4-H and results in a hit and run on a two dead... Wait a minute, am I reading this wrong? My favorite line was from the news anchor has to drink while reporting at the 4-H and results in a hit and run on two dead body bags. Arrest me for what hit and run on a dead body bag? Have you ever seen a flock of sheep been paraded off to market by a 10-year-old child? Thanks, Sean. Huh?
Yeah, John Berman.
I remember that, but what is it, a flock of sheep paraded off to market by a 10-year-old child?
Because one of his jobs before that was doing a report on the 4-H.
Oh, I
and that's why he drinks.
Thank you. Thanks, Sean. Phil, loved your comments on Mexico. As a gringo living down here, I thought you were dead on. I never knew the depth of gringo dorkiness until I moved down here. I hope someday to pipe your show down here, and I hope you could come down to Mexico City someday and do a live broadcast. Saludos, Greg, backstage pass member from day one, baby. Phil, just as death means nothing to Islamic extremists, truth means nothing to the extreme left, Sal Lamarco. Just these little nuggets that people are sending me, is that it? Hey, Phil, backstage pass member, I love your show. Recently, I have paid close attention when you discuss politics. In all of the interviews I've read, you continually talk about how 9/11 changed your life. I want to know if there is any way to find your first show right after September 11, 2001. Could you put that in the archives? I've listened to Bobby Dooley, Vernon Dozier, and all the others express their views the days after 9/11, but I'd like to hear your thoughts after that day that changed my life and should have changed the rest of this country, but unfortunately, it hasn't. Phil Packer. I don't know where that is, Phil. It's archived someplace. It should be in our archives. It should be on a DAT tape someplace, so we'll look for it, and we probably won't find it. Dear Phil, I just got my backstage pass 2 months ago, and now I can't imagine life without it. My favorite line is one I heard before I knew what the show was about. Bobby Dooley was telling us how she uses verbal abuse to keep her school kids in line. I tried to call in when she said she had told one girl, if you don't shut your mouth, I'm... If you don't shut your mouth, I'm going to sell you to a white man. Thanks for all the fun, David. Phil, bite your tongue. Coors Beer Incorporated is one of the biggest backers of that creepy bunch of bastards in the White House. If you're going to be a good little booster for those Nazi jerks, you better jump on the bandwagon and tout their products. Richard. Now, apparently you don't get it, Richard. I don't run along with a party line like you do, okay? If they back Bush, bad for Bush. And I ain't talking about Bush beer either. I'm talking about George Bush. Hey, I like George, but Coors Beer sucks, okay? Clear? Thank you. Phil, not sure if you heard the story of Bobo the Tiger and his escape from captivity here in Miami. When the officers tried to apprehend him, a confrontation ensued, and he was shot. I couldn't help thinking of a bit you did about a similar animal that also wanted to escape captivity. His name was Jimmy the Gorilla. You had him on your show and were interviewing him. Jimmy was angry about his confinement and talked about his other animal friends at the zoo who together were all planning a violent jailbreak, including Willie the Ape, Willie the Ape, Chad the Monkey, and Bobo the Leopard. That was the name of the guy that we... Yeah. Phil, you have single-handedly reinvented comedy. Don't ever stop doing what you do, Tom Martin. So they got a Bobo the Tiger down there, and we had Bobo the Leopard. But I love Chad the Monkey. And Willie the Ape. In fact, I think I have... Can you get... I've got a number on Jimmy the Gorilla. I want to see how he's doing, Janice. So call that number. We'll get Jimmy the Gorilla on the line here in just a moment. He was formerly at the Miami Zoo. I don't know where he is now. Well, that is our mailbag, is it? Yes, that's our mailbag for today. And our email address is phs@philhenryshow.com. And you may notice that much of our email is complimentary. We're certainly very happy to read non-complimentary email. The problem is a lot of it is kind of raving lunatic stuff, incorporating death threats and the usual boring details. So if you actually have taken exception to our show, by all means, do we get a lot of complaint mail? We must, Janice. But you don't ever let me read it. Why? How come?
Well, I support you.
Because you feel for me?
I do.
And you won't let me see it?
No, not all of it.
Is it all nasty and just personal? Is that it? That's, well, we don't read nasty personal stuff. Like my mother's a whore and that kind of stuff, right?
No, I don't let you see those.
I mean, honestly,
I don't say that, but I wouldn't.
Well, what do they say then? I'm a whore. Pretty much, yes. Thank you, Phil. All right, so do we have that line? Because I don't know whether we have him on the line, but I thought it would be interesting to get Jimmy the Gorilla on the line because we had talked with him, I don't know when it was, 6 or 7 years ago, about captivity in the Miami Zoo and how he felt about it. And at the time, he had escaped, and he got out, and let me see if he's on the line with us now. Jimmy, are you there? Jimmy the Gorilla from Miami, Florida. Jimmy, you there?
How you doing?
Good. Jimmy, how long you been out of the zoo?
You know, I was, I've been out probably about 6 years or something like that, but I've got a job right now. I'm doing public relations for Aladdin Hotel.
Are you at the Aladdin now?
Yes, I am.
I thought you were in Miami.
No, I left Miami probably in 1999, and I came down to Aladdin Hotel. I'm doing public relations. I'm doing... promoting a lot of their events and everything like that, and I'm enjoying it very much.
Did you have anything to do with Ronstadt getting off stage?
Yeah, I took her. I went up. I pulled her off stage by her hair because I couldn't take it. And it's not my job, you know. But I remember all the things that pissed me off, you know, all year in captivity in the Miami Zoo, and I appeared. I just got pissed, you know. And I heard her talking about, you know, Michael Moore in that movie.
Right.
And I went up, I just grabbed her by the hair, I pulled her off stage.
You dragged her off the stage by her hair?
Yes, I did. And I had my way with her. And
now, wait a minute, Jimmy. Are you saying...
No, I'll tell you straight up. I had my way with her out in... What I did, I took her around behind a garbage can outside.
Jimmy, dude...
Well, you got to understand, she bit me off just like anybody else. You know...
I know, but to take her around behind a garbage can...
Well, first of all, I could have taken her out of my room, but they were cleaning it. So, you know, and...
Well, was she a willing participant?
She said she was. She said, yeah. She said it was great.
Linda Ronstadt?
Yeah.
Are you going to see her again?
I think so. She asked me for my phone number. And, you know, Chad down here, too.
Chad the monkey?
Yeah, he's down here. You want to talk? Hey, Chad. Come on. Go ahead.
Man, I can't believe it, man. How you been?
I'm doing good, Chad. Listen, so, are you cats telling me that you and Linda Ronstadt and Jimmy DeGorilla?
Yeah, she's a freak. She's the man right now. Yeah, she's a freak, man. But you know, Jimmy, he's all right. See, everything, I'm straight, man. You know me.
Yeah, I know that.
But you gotta go, Phil.
Yeah, I do.
Damn.
Look, I just want to say hello to you guys. I'm going to be in Vegas in a couple of weeks.
Well, come on over to Latin, all right?
I'll be over there, okay.
Hey, Phil.
Yeah.
You got tickets to Avenger football?
Yeah, I do. The season's over.
No, I mean for next year?
Yeah, I do.
Can I?
Oh, hold on for a minute. 1-800-449-8... 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. The Whore. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
I was just rereading something about Hans Blix, who is probably one of the least principled people I think I've ever heard interviewed or I've ever heard speak. I don't know what he stands for, and I think what he stands for mostly is protecting his bosses at the United Nations. He was upset because it came out that maybe, not absolutely, but maybe. His offices were bugged by the United States, that we spied on him and Kofi Annan. Of course, we now find out in July of 2004, we've known this for a long time, but here we are in July of 2004, that the United Nations has been involved in a oil for food hoax. Not a program, a hoax. That the money used from the sale of oil that was to purchase food and medicine for the Iraqi people actually went into the pockets of some United Nations officials, into the pockets certainly of Saddam Hussein, and other members of other states, other leaders of other states, maybe the French. Nobody wants to talk about that. Hey, nobody wants to do a movie about that one, do they? When are we going to see the documentary on that one, blubber ass? Or are you still too busy reading your own press clippings? How about a documentary on that one? How about a documentary on the UN, the sacrosanct organization that we were supposed to just follow right through the gates of hell, and the fact that they might have been sticking their hand in the till at the expense of the Iraqi people? Are we going to get a documentary on that? What is your version of those facts, man, huh? Or how about the documentary on a national security advisor for President Clinton, guy I voted for twice, stealing documents for the National Archives, hiding notes that he was taking from information in the National Archives, trying to keep materials from the 9/11 Commission, a national security advisor, not for the Bush administration, which you say is completely and totally you and the pea brains that think your movie is truth, you think the Bush administration is totally responsible for it. When are we going to see the documentary on Sandy freaking Berger, dude? I bet you the only documentary on a burger you're going to do, man, is a freaking triple double Mac. Or whatever the hell you're eating these days. The only burger he's doing a documentary on is a bonus Jack. All right, it's time now for Ted Bell of Ted's of Beverly Hills. Ted Bell was on our program yesterday talking about his restaurant hosting reunion parties for high schools. But They have a level one and level two. The level one are the classmates who made a certain income. The level two classmates are the ones who made less income. And level twos are asked to leave at 9:30 so that the other classmates can enjoy the party. Here is Ted Bell.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy Gold.
Yeah, Mr. Bell, I just want to let you know, I was president of my high school class, and I've had, I've arranged for two of these already.
Yeah.
And we've had everybody there. It's had a great time. And I think you're pretty much full of yourself.
Everybody
there. Thinking that people go there to see how much money somebody makes. It's not about that. It's about going to see and to be with friends.
Everybody there has had a good time. You don't know that for a fact. You know that
well,
they said here, well, gee, Jeff, thanks a lot, really
matter.
Great night. You know,
wait,
thanks,
Mr. Bell,
thanks for hiring
something?
The DJ, you know.
Yeah, Mr. Bell, let me just tell you, it doesn't, everyone's going to be comfortable, but who cares? It's only for one night. You're there to see friends for an evening.
It shouldn't matter.
It
shouldn't matter, but it does make people uncomfortable. Maybe you can't relate to this because maybe you don't make as much money, but the ones that
do make a good amount of money, but the question never comes up because that's not what they're there for.
It doesn't sound to me like you make the kind of money that I'm talking about. Otherwise, it would bother you.
Well, I think you're wrong there, but that doesn't matter. Money does not matter. That's the problem.
Well, it does matter.
It's all about money. I mean, I feel sorry for you, but that's all you care about, how much somebody makes.
I can understand why this man's having a problem, why the last lady had a problem, because they don't make the kind of income I'm talking about, Phil.
Well, what do you mean? Are you saying that you're uncomfortable?
I'm saying myself and others like me, yes.
With who? With Jeff and the other lady?
Well, anybody that, who cares? Obviously, he's not making my income. It matters to us. Because I don't want Jeff coming up to me and trying to be my friend.
Why would I try to be your friend if all you care about money? How much would you know I made? How much I made?
Well,
unless you ask
a lot
me.
Of the level
and
twos get together.
If that's what you care about, how much someone?
Well, look
needs,
at Jeff. What I'm trying to say.
You know, I don't want to be your friend.
Well, look, it's not doesn't matter to me. It's just that I can tell
obviously
a guy
it
that does doesn't
matter to you.
No, it doesn't matter as well. I can tell a guy that doesn't make as much as me kind of talks the way you do.
Well,
all right,
who cares?
A lot of the level twos, what we do for them is we rent out the batting cage. They're able to go down to the batting cage and have a great time.
Hey, listen,
but
Mr. Bell, listen. Look, I'm an airline pilot. I'm a pilot in the military. I've been through lots of wars. Do you think I wouldn't be proud of that? Of course I'm proud of that.
You've been through a lot of wars.
I make a damn good living.
That's
so
fine.
So who
You've
cares what somebody
wars.
Makes?
But I told you, Jeff, you're talking like a guy that, if I got to listen to you all night, woohoo!
I don't want to listen
my
to you at all, so don't worry about it. Like
right.
I said, I arranged these for
Good.
My...
Good, then leave at 9:30.
I arranged these from my school.
Well, look at Jeff, if I could jump in, you don't have people leaving early, do you?
No, absolutely not. Everyone wants to stay.
We got a pool out back, a pond. The pond would be great for you, whatever you want to do, but I can't have you hanging around.
Well, believe me, I don't
right,
want to
okay.
hang around someone
Jeff,
like
thank
you.
1-800-449-86. Will you not with that, please?
No, that's the foghorn. And that. See, here's the thing he doesn't understand and what the leather lady didn't understand. It may not bother them, but those of us who make a high income are bothered at our high school reunions when our less than successful classmates show up and immediately try to impress us with a lot of baloney about how well they're doing in business.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy Gold.
So there it is. That's one way of dealing with things. And, of course, when you hear that foghorn, get out. There's Ted Bell from our show yesterday on high school reunions. Oh, what a fun thing they is. 1-800-449. You know, my wife just had her high school reunion at our house. 1-800-449-8686 is our number. She just had her high school reunion, and we hosted it at our house. And I don't want to talk out of school, but she told me the story of one girl in school when she was in high school, and she hated her guts, right? And she pulled a particularly nasty prank on her. I don't want to say what, because some of you may be eating. But let's just say it has to do, I don't want to go there. I don't even want to go there. Anyway, so my wife pulls this nasty prank on this girl who she didn't like and the girl didn't like her. Apparently the two of them were like just oil and water. They, you know, it just happens, right? And anyway, halfway through the night I'm talking to this gal, and this is one of these women that was at this, along with their husbands and their boyfriends, etc., was at this high school reunion at our house. And Maria takes me aside and says, "That's the girl that I did that thing to." I said, "Really?" So I immediately went over and told her, "No, I didn't." But it's funny, because I found myself not really liking this person. She was, like, hitting on my 19-year-old son, which I thought was a little... It must have grossed my kid out. You know, my eldest guy, Nick, he's like, the guy's a hunk. Seriously, he's really like good looking, and he's ripped, and he works out and all this stuff. And like, it's really creepy when I hear like all of my wife's friends are coming. Oh my God. I mean, they all turn into Bobby Dooley. Here comes Nick. The guy's wearing a tank top. Hey, Mom, I'm gonna go work out. Okay, yeah, we'll see you later, dude. You know, later. Oh. And like fanning themselves. Will you stop it? So anyway, she was doing that, right? And I saw Nick kind of walk away kind of wobbly, and then he knelt down in the bushes and just puked. But he was fine. But we had a high school reunion, and everyone had a blast. And because of the Catholic high school reunion, the booze flowed like you wouldn't believe. And the Catholic priests were there, and the nuns were there. Man, I hadn't seen a nun in about a million years. There were like four nuns that showed up. And they were nice, very nice ladies. And they looked happy. They all looked happy, and they all had on their little... You know, nuns don't wear those nun suits anymore. They wear... They look like airline attendants. Basically, look like flight attendants. I mean, not that good, but they got on the same kind of little skirts and the tops and all that. And the nuns were there, and there was this one nun who was drinking me under the table. And she was from, get this, I swear to God, Ireland. Oh, yeah. And she was talking like this. I love a nice fire. I said, well, sister, I forget her name, sister, one of those names, you know, Sister Angelica, Sister Glorification, Sister Most Highest, something like that, and Sister Ascension, you know, they're all named after some large and just otherworldly, you know, Sister Alien, just Sister Extraterrestrial Black Hole. So I said, yeah, I'll make you a fire, sister. We got those little click gas fireplaces. You know, why don't you sit here?
Oh, I love a nice fire.
All right, well, you sit right here, and I even put one of those things, you know, I don't know, there's something in me that the Catholic school kid never dies, right? There's the nun, so I got a little blanket to put on her, you know, she's kind of old. And then she said,
and Phil, would you mind just a wee taste?
Well, she didn't say taste, but I got the message. So I went downstairs, and I grabbed a bottle of Jim Beam, and she was fine. I just went up there and handed it to her. I said, here. And she went, oh, aren't you a lovely boy?
You're just a lovely little boy.
And she gave my ass a squeeze, and off I went. No, she didn't. The very nice ladies. And they were all the teachers. This is Maria's teachers, sister, everybody, every nun. All of them. Oh, I know why they were Irish, because they're the Sisters of Louisville. And Louisville, no, that ain't the one in Kentucky, Chris. It's in Ireland. And these nuns from Ireland are called the Nuns of Louisville. And they came out here to try to convert the heathens here in America.
We've come out west to try to convert the heathens in California.
And so that was a lot of fun. You know, it was cool. But the thing about high school reunions, that I noticed this. Women do this, the guys don't. Well, my husband and I, yeah, we're very happy. You know, he's busy, we haven't seen each other in a couple of months. But it's, it's gradually, it's just sort of leaking out that they're all miserable in their marriages. Oh, we've been married. How long have you been married? Oh, we've been married 25 years. Have you ever said to people, they say we've been married 25 years ago, congratulations? They get that look on their face like, like somebody just let one, just not particularly pleasant. Like, you know, you're trying to pretend. When you ask people how long you've been married, and they say, for instance, 25 years, and you say to them, congratulations, they get that look on their face that people get when they suddenly smell a really corrosive fart, but they don't want to let on that they do. You know what I mean? It's the smile like this, kind of, yeah, oh boy. Because, I don't know, man. I mean, you're married to the same person for 30 years. Are you blissful? You're happy. And you're happy you're married to her. And you wouldn't be married to anybody else. And you love her. And you still have sex. And thank God for that. Don't let that die, man. Don't let it go away. None of this, I haven't had sex in 3 months, bullcrap. Once a week, at least. At least. Otherwise, you're dead. If you're married, I'm going to give you some advice. Yeah. I know you cats are going at it 15 times a day now, man. You've been married 3 weeks. Wait till you're married 3-4 years, friend. And you got to start making time for it because you got kids, and your wife starts to go, oh, I think the kids are in the house. Maybe we ought to lock the door. You know, all of this good stuff. You got to make time for it at least once a week. I ain't kidding you. You can save yourself a lot of heartache. But, you know, after 25 years, some of these people, it's like it's an endurance contest. In other words, yeah, we've been married 30 years, and I, by God, I'm going to just, oh, man, you're not going to give it up, are you, Charlie? No, I'm not. I'm going to see it through to the bitter end. So, 30 years, congratulations. Oh, well, ooh, you had to remind me. All right, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
Chris Pelton went and saw Anchorman, the Will Ferrell film, and he asked for his money back. Now, I'm just reporting the news. I am not judging. I am not making any comments. I'm just reporting the news as I see it here from this anchor desk. Chris Pelton, the associate producer of the Phil Henry Show, went to see Anchorman, starring Will Ferrell and a variety of other, quote, funny, end quote, guys. Now, Will's a nice guy. Remember when he came over to that lobster festival to say hello to us because he says he likes our show? But like so many of those people who say they like our show, they never want to have anything more to do with us? Yeah, that Will Ferrell. Anyway, Chris went and saw the movie, and he said the thing stunk the joint out, man. They laid an egg like you wouldn't believe. I guess it's doing pretty good, though, so it'll probably make, its money and rental, blah, 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 whatever. Chris, who cares about you? You got taste. We got news about KFC coming up here, 1-800-449-8686. Tyrone?
Yes.
Yes, sir. Hi, how you doing?
How are you?
Good, man.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
I live in Miami. I guess your guy told you that, and a couple occasions I caught the Neil Rogers show, and he's saying that you're a sellout. So I'm saying to myself, what the hell he means by that? And I tried to call his show, but I can't get
Neil Rogers. Neil Rogers is a host in Miami, for those of you who don't know. You know, Neil used to be a big supporter of mine, and then one day after I left Miami and I came to the West Coast and I got my show syndicated, then all of a sudden he took a shot at me on the air. And unlike most people who get shots from Neil, they don't fire back. I fired back. I called him a gutless wonder, which is what he is.
Well, he's also
a backstabber. And there isn't a friend that guy's ever made that he hasn't stuck a shank in their back. So it's not surprising for Neil to call me a sellout because I got the guts to do something with my career while he ran off to Canada. And that's basically the story of Neil Rogers.
Well, you think it's because you're supporting Bush like I am with the war?
Well, you know, Neil's like a lot of these guys. I mean, I checked his website out because, there was a time when I actually liked the guy. And he's got all the pictures of the dead babies, so Neil's probably one of those guys that clicks his heels with joy and claps his hands together when he's got another dead baby picture to put up on his website. So good for you, Neil.
All right, thanks a lot.
You got it, brother.
Okay.
1-800-449-8686. I'm a sellout because I support Bush, huh? You know, the sellouts are the people that are against this war. I mean, they're selling out left and right. Left and right. You got to find more people in this country that think, yeah, the whole thing's a conspiracy. You'll learn, man. You'll find out. It'll be, I swear to God, it's going to come crashing down like a ton of bricks when we finally realize that for all of America's faults and for all of the things that we may have done right or wrong, that there are still just bad people in the world who represent a historical trend toward the negative, while there are others who represent a historical trend toward the positive. And it doesn't matter if you're the nicest people in the world. Sometimes history plays out this way, that there are forces for the future and there are forces for the past. Al-Qaeda, Saddam Hussein, Islamic fundamentalist terrorists, Islamists, whatever you want to call them, represent an effort at returning the world to a dark past. The fight is in the 21st century is going to be against terrorists. Bill Clinton predicted it in 1999, and he said so publicly. And unless we can pull our heads out of our asses and confront this problem, it's going to get bad, man. It's going to get real bad. This coming century is going to be, it's going to make the 20th century look like somebody's birthday party. The 21st century is going to be a violent, violent century. And much of it will take place in North America, because that's what they want. And I don't give a crap if John Kerry's in the White House, Michael Moore's in the White House, Barbara Streisand's in the White House, or Mahatma Gandhi's in the White House. They're still going to hate us, they're still going to want to kill us, and they're still going to want to attack us here. And you guys up in Canada, don't think you're going to wake squeaky clean. They're going to come after you, too. Don't worry about it. Now, Bush may be out of office in November of 2004, but by God, we'll remember this man. He gave us a fighting chance, a fighting start into this century. Without him, we would not be half as prepared as we are today. Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. The last gasp before the...